darkness than the night could bear. Envelope the heavens and possess.
Sparing with punctuation.
Okay.
Thank you.
everyone.
Please turn your mobile phones off. Mine is off.
So we're reading in book 7, the book of yoga, and we've reached canto 6, nirvana, and the all-negating absolute. This is the book of Savitri's yoga. In order to fulfill her mission, the reason why she's been born, she's been instructed to look into herself and find her soul. And we've been following her in that process. It's interesting that it reflects a bit what we've been reading in the Wednesday class of the Life Divine. There we are just in a passage where Sri Aurobindo has been explaining about the individual soul, the soul spark of some eternal individualized potentiality of the Supreme, which agrees to plunge into this adventure of involution and evolution. It's the inconscient, without or awareness. And through the experience of many incarnations, embodiments, it builds up in evolution, in evolutionary time, a soul personality for itself. Very interestingly, what recently Sri Aurobindo said, the primary work of that evolving soul, that evolving psychic being, is to support the evolution of our outer being. The physical, the life parts, the mind. That's its primary work. But at the same time, when it's doing that, it's growing from all its experiences, all its interactions in nature that is feeding and strengthening the soul within. And when the soul being is sufficiently developed and has been able to determine the outer conditions of the being sufficiently, then it can begin to step forward. And this is what Savitri has been shown in a vision, that this evolutionary process, and she's been shown that in her, that process has reached a certain level, and that now, in order to go further, she has to become consciously aware in her outer being of the soul being within. Yeah. And so we've been following her in her quest. She's been shown that because of her particular mission, the soul cannot reveal itself suddenly and completely. Her job is to show the way for ordinary human beings. And so she has to find the soul in her material being. And to do that, the first thing we saw that she sensed or divined the presence of the soul deep inside, and she started to enter into her inner being to reach it. And she had to pass through, first of all, a very difficult passage in the, what I suppose we would call the subconscious cycle, where it's just a tumult and a chaos of conflicting impulses, mainly sense impulses, that want to find delight, ecstasy for themselves, but they reject every kind of control or light or anything. And this is described very, very vividly as being carried along by a crowd, a panicky crowd in a narrow space, in a crowded street. She's just carried along and carried along and carried along until she's able to detach her individual consciousness from that and call for peace. And then peace comes and she's free of all that pressure of these impulses. You remember that, And then the next thing that came, so for a while there was a sort of peace, a very wonderful, tranquil state. But then, as if rushing into that, like a summer flood in the desert, there's a gigantic torrent of life force, which has magnificent as well as dreadful aspects. But it's a very, very powerful life energy, which also wants to be free of the control of higher reason or anything like that. So there too, she has to make a great effort to keep herself separate from that torrent, so that she's like, he says, on a high island with this tossing flood all around her. She's able to keep separate above that flow of life impulses. Then she comes into another realm where there is life and mind, where the life is ruled by the reason, very much under the control of mental ideals and aims. And in this way, it is diminished and weakened. It's not able to realize its highest possibilities. From that state, she passes into a realm which is ruled by high ideals. There's a being who steps forth and says, "Now you have reached the land of truth. Congratulations, you are one of us. Please stay here. This is the end of your search." And very, very beautifully, Savitri replies to him, saying that it's wonderful that you've reached this kind of certitude, but I cannot stay here. I'm not a citizen of this realm of yours. I have to go further because I'm looking for my soul. And then everybody there looks at her and thinks, who is this that doesn't know that the soul is just a function of the body, or it's an imagination of the mind? There's no such thing. But she's able to pass even further. There's a kind of road, and along this road are hastening from her inner being beautiful shining beings. They're coming out of the home of the soul, and they are rushing to help the world. And for a moment, she wants to go with them. But she realizes and remembers that she can't go and help the world until she's done this work of finding her soul. So she asks them, "Show me, where do you come from? You must know where I'm going." And one of those beings points her the way. This is the way you have to follow. So she has to follow the world's winding highway to its source, to the place where all these manifestations come from. And she comes to a kind of a mountain seated on the ground at the foot of the mountain, there is a wonderful goddess figure. Full of compassion, she's the Madonna of compassion, of divine pity, bearing, helping all of us in the world to support suffering. Wherever there is suffering, she is there to give comfort and solace and strength. But she says, God gave me strength to solace, to comfort, but not to save. And when she speaks to Savitri, we also hear the voice of a kind of dark echo of that beautiful divine presence of pity and compassion. It's self-pity in the depths of nature, complaining and groaning and saying, yes, God has made this world just to enjoy my suffering. Yeah. But he feels weak, there's nothing he can do about it, so there's only resentment and anger. So this being is also there in us. So Savitri promises that Madonna that I have to go on my journey, but I will return, I will come back, and then I will bring you the strength that you need in order to do more to help suffering humanity. And she promises her that one day everything will be, that your love, your compassion will be the bond of all humankind, and then there will be peace and joy on earth. And she goes further, and she meets another being on a slightly higher level. That is the Madonna of strength. She's like a great goddess. She's similar in appearance to the goddess Durga. She sits with her feet on a lion, and she says, I'm the one who brings strength to the courageous, prize. I give the reward of their bravery to those who fight. And I am always trying to oppose the darker forces of the world. And I would save the world, but nobody pays attention to me. And there too, there's this dark echo of the fierce life, dynamic life part in us, very self-centered, demanding. So Savitri says, when I return, I will bring you wisdom. You need wisdom to complete your strength. And when you can use wisdom along with your strength, then everything in the world will become better. And the third Madonna is the Madonna of Light. And to her, Savitri gives wonderful advice. She says that it's not by bringing light into the intellect of man that you will be able to fulfill your mission. What you have to do is to nurse in human beings their thirst for the eternal and the true. And in this way, they will grow. And when I return, I will be bringing the divine presence with me. And then the divine family shall be born, and everything on earth will be full of love and power and light and bliss. So Savitri proceeds further on her way, and we read the previous canto, which told about how she finally entered the house of the soul and was able to unite with her own higher being. We were shown how the soul, the central being above us, who has emanated this little being like the thumb of a man seated in a hid secret region of the heart, who is representing our highest, truest being, facing all the troubles of the world. And these two, the higher being and the lower being, they unite and become one. And the second part of that canto was this beautiful description of how the Savitri was back on earth, finished her journey through the subtle worlds, back in her little hut in the forest beside sleeping Satyavan. But she was aware of the blooming of her soul. And from that soul center, she called to that highest being to come down and inhabit her whole self. And as the result, there was an incredible transformation of all the centers, all the chakras. So that brought her into a very marvelous state of happiness and confidence. And when she looked into the future, she didn't see Satyavan dead. She saw him living with her, and not living in the forest, but living in the town among the high thinking lives of men, living the life of a ruler and a prince as he was meant to be. But then we came here to another experience where her whole inner world, all that happiness and confidence and everything that she'd experienced, just gets laid waste as if by a terrible tornado that is telling her that the soul doesn't exist. Nothing exists. Only me, this dark presence. I've created everything. I devour everything. The whole universe is just my trick on you. I lay waste human happiness with my breath and slay the will to live, the joy to be, that all may pass back into nothingness and only abide the eternal and absolute, for only the blank eternal can be true. Everything else is the illusion of mind. So this is absolutely devastating. But her soul is there, and it remains quiet, waiting now what will be the will of the Supreme. And another voice comes, the voice of light, driving away the voice of night. And it gives her two pieces of advice. First of all, it says, you've had this wonderful soul discovery. Now protect it. Keep it very secret and quiet within yourself first. And the other thing is that you have come here with a mission. You've come into the suffering world to open to light the eyes that could not see, and to make your life a bridge, a connection between earth and heaven. So if you want to do that, you have to be able to experience all the suffering in the universe as your own. You must be able to bear this sorrow that you've come to heal. God must be born on earth and be as man, that man, being human, may grow even as God. He who would save the world must be one with the world. And I think that's where we had come to. I think that's where we stopped. No? So we have a few more lines to study before we come to the end of the section. So we'll start there, page 537, line 186. Yeah? Gael, would you read?
He who would save the world must be one with the world. All suffering things contain in his heart space and bear the grief and joy of all that lives. His soul must be wider than the universe and feel eternity as its very stuff, rejecting the moment's personality, know itself older than the birth of time, creation, an incident in its consciousness. Arcturus and Belphegor, grains of fire circling in a corner of its boundless self. The world's destruction, a small transient story in the calm infinity it has become. If thou wouldst a little loosen the vast chain, draw back from the world that the idea has made, from the infinite, thy senses gloss on the infinitesimal stents, then shalt thou know how the great bondage came.
Thank you. This is a very great challenge, isn't it? Even the New Testament tells us, you know, love your neighbor as yourself. And Christians have been trying to do it for centuries, and we find that it's not that easy. Not possible, in fact. Here Sri Aurobindo describes how it becomes possible. It can only be possible if the soul expands to become wider than the universe, not restricted just to our own individual self. We have to become really spiritualized so that we feel eternity as the very substance of our being. So in order to do that, we have to get away from this little personality that we've formed in time and know our soul must remember that it is older than the birth of time, that our true individuality is eternal, timeless, beyond the manifestation. And we have projected ourselves here. We've done it willingly to be part of this adventure and this work. But in order to fulfill the work, we have to remember and remake the connection. We have to realize that creation, this particular creation we are part of now, is just an incident in our vast superconscious. And these distant stars, Arcturus and Belphegor, which look to us like tiny little grains of fire, they are just circling somewhere in a corner of our infinite boundless self. So that if this whole world got destroyed, that would just be a little passing storm in the calm infinity of our consciousness, what it has become. So if you want to do this, Savitri, the voice says, if you want to help to loosen this vast chain of illusion or matter or whatever it is, you have to draw back from the world that the idea has made. You have to draw back from all the appearances of this creation. You have to draw back from all the mental perceptions, the selection that your mind makes from the infinity of things. And you have to draw back from what the senses tell you. They are giving you a gloss on the infinitesimals dance. That's the world of matter. It's a dance of energy, material energy, and forms, tiny little forms. You're receiving sense impressions. They're interpreting their perceptions of this infinitesimals dance, transmitting that. Your mind is accepting that interpretation that the senses give you. You're going to have to detach yourself from all that. Then you will be able to know how this great bondage, this chain of appearances, has come about. And then she has to do some more things. Or in order to achieve that, there are some steps that she has to take. And that's what we are going to follow in the rest of the canto. Paula, you would read. Banish all thought.
Then shalt thou uncover the unknowable, and the superconscious grow on thy tops. Infinity's vision through thy gaze shall pierce. Thou shalt look into the eyes of the unknown. Find the hid truth in things seen null and false. Behind things known, discover mysteries rear. Thou shalt be one with God's bare reality, and the miraculous world he has become, and the diviner miracle still to be, when nature, who is now unconscious God, translucent grows to the eternal's light, her seeing his sight, her walk his steps of power, and life is filled with a spiritual joy, and matter is the spirit's willing bride. Consent to be nothing and none. Dissolve time's work, cast off thy mind, step back from form and name. Annul thyself, that only God may be.
Thank you.
Can you tell again whose voice this is?
This is the voice of light that comes, the word that touches the heart and finds the soul. It's the word from the highest superconscious coming to her. And that devastating voice had told her, you are nothing, you are null. No. In a negative way. But now this voice is telling her, you can become nothing and null in a positive way. You're lost, Don?
No. I said what you just said,
So the chapter we are reading in The Life Divine is called The Triple Transformation. And the first transformation is the psychic soul transformation, the discovery of the soul and the change that this can bring about in the nature. That's exemplified in Canto 5. And now this devastating experience of all the negativity of the world, which challenges the natural joy and bliss of the psychic being. This has come, this has been allowed to come to her, to give her the opportunity to take the next step, which is the spiritual transformation. So Sri Aurobindo tells us elsewhere in his letters that essentially, it doesn't matter which of these realizations comes first. For some individuals, it may be the spiritual realization that comes first. But Sri Aurobindo and the mother recommended to their disciples to aspire for the psychic experience first. They felt that this perhaps was safer and made it easier to take the spiritual realization in the right way. But anyway, they said both of them together are necessary for the third realization, which is the culmination of Sri Aurobindo's yoga, which is the supramental realization, which, having achieved the oneness, having lost the ego entirely, one can become a pure instrumentation of the divine will in the world without blockage or obstruction of any kind. Yes, Don?
To become such and yet not have an ego any longer is so difficult to comprehend.
Yeah, so we will find this described.
Okay.
But of course it's all very difficult, and even the very first step seems too difficult for us. No? But at least this is the map of the journey. And this is, if we want to help save the world, the steps are set clearly forth here in this wonderful, powerful, poetic language. Yes.
When you tell he would save the world, must be one with the world. One is totally unified. Alors, at this moment, maybe when somebody finds in Auroville, I just tell you like that, the one, maybe save Auroville, but Auroville is some expression of the world.
Yes, of course. Yes. So that is, of course, what Sri Aurobindo and the mother did.
Yeah.
They achieved this state, and in this state, but still in these unsupramentalized bodies, they did what they could. No? So this is a whole evolutionary process, both inner and outer. But there are some wonderful poems of Sri Aurobindo's from the end of the 1930s, where he speaks of being the cosmic man and experiencing in his own, he says, I carry the sorrow of millions in my breast, in my single breast. So if you have this spiritual realization, what is now superconscient will become conscious in the higher levels of your being. And you will be looking out of your eyes, but it will be the gaze of infinity, the unlimited, which is looking through your eyes and seeing things. And you will be able to look into the eyes of all that is unknown. You will be able to see the truth behind all the appearances, things that seem to be insignificant, distorted, nothing. You will see what the truth that is hiding behind them and behind things that are familiar and known. You will discover the amazing mystery that is behind them. And then you can be united with the bare, featureless reality of the One who is free of all name and form and limitation and individualization. But you'll also be able to become one with this miraculous world, as he has done. He has become all this. You will also be able to be all this. and you will be able to become one with the even more divine miracle that's going to happen in the future, when all this unconscious nature, which is now God unconscious, becomes translucent. She allows the Eternal's light to glow through her. And his seeing will be the seeing of nature. Her walk, the way that she moves, will be his steps of power. And life will be filled with a spiritual joy. And matter, this unconscious God, is going to be the Spirit's willing bride. They will be united and work together. That's the fulfillment that's intended. That's why our souls have come into all this. But to achieve that spiritual realization, she's told, consent to be nothing and none. Dissolve all this work of time, your nature being. Cast off thy mind. Step back from form and name. Annul thyself. Make yourself nothing, so that for you only God may exist. There will be nothing else, just the Lord. So in the rest of Canto 6 and then Canto 7, we shall see this follow step by step Savitri's experience on this path. And some parts of it are wonderfully practical for ourselves. There's a whole section on the steps of quietening the mind. So we haven't read the rest of the canto, so that's what we'll do first. We will just read around up to page 550. Who's next? Don? Yes?
Thus spoke the mighty and uplifting voice, and Savitri heard. She bowed her head and mused, plunging her deep regard into herself, in her soul's privacy in the silent night. Aloof and standing back, detached and calm, a witness of the drama of herself, a student of her own interior scene, she watched the passion and the toil of life and heard in the crowded thoroughfares of mind the unceasing tread and passage of her thoughts. All she allowed to rise that chose to stir, calling, compelling naught, forbidding naught. She left all to the process formed in time and the free initiative of nature's will. Following the complex human play, she heard the prompter's voice behind the scenes, perceived the original libretto set, and the organ theme of the composer force. All she beheld that surges from man's depths, the animal instincts prowling mid life's trees, the impulses that whisper to the heart, and passion's thunder chase sweeping the nerves. She saw the powers that stare from the abyss and the wordless light that liberates the soul.
Thank you. Sergei?
But most he gave to see the door of thought. And Francis, from the look of surprise smile, she paused, not to survey the official case. The issue of forms from the office of the brave, inspector of her sounds and soundless world, and voices stored within, not for my man. Its meat and treasure of shining coin. These were but counters in my symbol's being, the gramophone's disc, and the production's film, a list of signs, a sign, and a call. In our unseen subtle body, felt this ball, or then it enters from the cosmic field. Or from your soul step out and make a thought, the meanings with the stupid lips and wonderful eyes. Or from your heart emerge some blank face, and look for life and love and patient truth, aspire to help or embrace the world, or let the fancy light a fleeting home across the dull sky of man's common days, amidst the doubtful certitudes of earth's lore, the celestial beauty of faith gave forth, as if a flower brings an angel love in the woven ways, one living rose.
Thank you. Mila.
A thaumatist sat in her heart's feet, comparing the forward stride, the upward look, till wonder lit into the illumined breast, and life grew marvelous with transfiguring hope. A seeing without thoughts, listening angels, stood behind the brain in flashing armor, holding hands of prayer, and pour heaven's ray into the early form. Imagination flamed up from her breast, unearthly beauty, touches of surpassing joy, and plans of miracle, dreams of delight. Around her navel lotus clustering grow, her large sensations of the teeming worlds, stream the damp movements of the unformed idea. Invading the small sensitive flower of the throat, they brought the mute unearthed resonances to kindle the feeders of a heavenly speech. Below, desires formed their wordless wish, and longings of physical sweetnesses and ecstasies translated into the accents of a cry, their grasp on objects and their clasp on souls. Her body's thoughts climbed from her conscious means, and carried their journeys to its mystic crown, where nature's murmurs met the ineffable.
Thank you. Marie-Ange.
But for the mortal prison in outward mind, all must present their passports at its door. Disguised, they must don the official cap and mask, or pass as manufacturers of the brain, unknown their secret truth and hidden source. Only to the inner mind they speak direct, but on the body and assume a voice, the passage seen, their message heard and known, their birthplace and their natal mark revealed, and stand confessed to an immortal sight, our nature's messengers to the witness soul. Impenetrable, we felt from mortal sense, the inner chambers of the spirit's house disclose to her their happening and their guest. Eyes look through crevices in the invisible world, and through the secrecy of unseen doors, there came into mind little frontal wound thoughts that enlarged our limited human range. Lifted ideas, half quenched or sinking torch, or peered through the finite at the infinite.
Thank you. Rosa?
The sight opened upon the invisible and sensed the shapes that mortal eyes see not, the sounds that mortal listening cannot hear, the blissful sweetness of the intangible thoughts, the object that to us are empty air, the stuff of daily experience in the common
papulum.
And the beam
appear and send
scenes.
Concealed behind our earthly seeing. She saw the life of remote continents and distance defend not to waste far. She felt their movements crossing unknown minds. Their past events occurred before her eyes. The great world thought were part of her own thought. The dumb forever and unshared. The ideas that never found an utterance.
Thank you. And
the themes of consciousness, incoherent hints, lay bare a meaning twisted, deep and strange. The bizarre secret of their humbling speech, their limbs with divine reality. The unseen grew visible and audible, thoughts leaped down from a subconscious field, like eagles slipping from a viewless peak. Thoughts gleamed up from the screen, subliminal depths, like golden fishes from a hidden sea. This world is a vast, unbroken totality, a deep solidity joins its contrary powers. Conscious nature look back on the mute abyss. So, man evolving to divinest heart, coexisting with the animal and the
jinn, yeah.
The human godhead with the stargazing eyes, lives still in one house with the primal beast. The high meets the low, all is a single prayer. So she beheld the many births of thought. If births can be of what eternal is, of eternal powers are like himself. Timeless in the timeless, in time everywhere.
Thank you. Audrey?
This too she saw, that all in outer man is made, not born, a product perishable, forged in the body's factory by earth force. This mind is a dynamic small machine, producing ceaselessly till it wears out. With raw material drawn from the outside world, the pattern sketched out by an artist's draw. Often our thoughts are finished cosmic wares, emitted by a silent office gate, and pass through the subconscious galleries, then issued in times marked as private mail. For now they bear the living person's stamp, a trick. A special hue claims them his own. All else is nature's craft, and this to hers. Our tasks are given. We are but instruments. Nothing is all our own that we create. The power that acts in us is not our force.
Thank you. Mihong.
The genius to receive from some high fount, conceived in a superman secrecy, world that gives him an immortal name. The word, the form, the charm, the glory and grace are missions, sparks from a stupendous fire, a sample from the laboratory of God, over which he holds the pattern upon earth, comes to him wrapped in golden covering. He listens for inspirations, postmen knock, and takes delivery of the priceless gift. A little spoilt by the receiver mind, all mixed with the manufacture of his brain. When least defaced, then is it most divine.
Thank you. The Kester?
Lord, the devil claims the word for Oribus. Oribus news. But in a dynamic order, cosmic work, nature does most link for high. As only the soul acceptance is all. This independent was our supreme self for before the universe was made. Accepting cosmos by minds himself. It is so in it comes freedom of course. So this is the superhouse of our total our greater good of new lives to die.
Helmut?
For above the birth of body and of thought, our spirit's truth lives in the naked self. And from that height, unbound, surveys the world. Out of the mind she rose to escape its law, that it might sleep in some deep shadow of self, or fall silent in the silence of the unseen. Height she attained and stood from nature free, then saw creation's life from far above. Thence upon all she laid her sovereign will to dedicate it to God's timeless calm. Then all grew tranquil and her being space in her being space, only sometimes small thoughts arose and fell like quiet waves upon a silent sea, or ripples passing over a lonely pool when a stray stone disturbs its dreaming rest. Yet the mind's factory had ceased to work. There was no sound of the dynamo's thought. There came no call from all but from the still fields of life. Then even no stirring rose in her no more. Her mind now seemed like a vast empty room or like a peaceful landscape without sound. This man called quietude and prizes peace. But to her deep outside, all that was there, effervescing like a chaos under the lid. Feelings and thoughts cried out for world and time, but found no response in the silent brain. All was suppressed, but nothing yet expanded. At every moment might explosion.
Thank you.
Then these two hopes, one seeing stone, all worlds wide might divide, but still spewed from eternity's heart, for still was far and opposed to the action of the ocean, silence of infinity. Even now some folks could close its origin, then search not in the depths from within, cast up in formlessness to seek a form, spoke not to the body's need, nor voice life's call. They seem not whole, nor made in human time, children of cosmic nature from the far world. Ideas, shapes incomplete are no words, posed like gathered in an alien space. Out of some far expanse is seen to come, as it carried on vast wings like large white sails, and with easy access reached the inner ear. I thought they used a natural privilege right to the high royal entries of the soul.
Mm, thank you. Patricia.
As yet, their path lay deep concealed in light. Then, looking to know whence the intruders came, she saw a spiritual immensity pervading and encompassing the world space as ether, our transparent, tangible air. And through it, sailing tranquilly, a thought. As smoothly glides a ship nearing its port, ignorant of embargo and blockade, confident of entrance and the visa's seal, it came to the silent city of the brave, towards its accustomed and expectant
key,
but met a barring will, a blow of force, and sank, vanishing in the immense. After a long vacant pause, another appeared, and others, one by one, suddenly emerged, minds, unexpected visitors from the unseen, like far-off sails upon a lonely sea. But soon that commerce failed. None reached Rhine's coast. Then all grew still. Nothing moved anymore. Immobile, self-wrapped, timeless, solitary, a silent spirit pervading silent space.
Mm, thank you. Jocelyn.
In the absolute silence, bare and formidable, the one lives and all negating all supreme, but claimed its mystic meaning sovereign right, cancel nature and deny the soul. Even the new sense of self declared and free, impersonal, timeless, picturesque, void of forms, a blank pure consciousness had escaped the mind. Your spirit seemed the substance of a name. You were a sure symbol of Roman self, the dream of nature, the dream of time, the root of the semblance of the universe, or land of spirit in the appearance of the world.
sense to find the fear of things. The sheer self-sight was there. No thought arose.
Thank you, Margaret.
Emotion slept deep down in the still heart, or lay buried in a cemetery of peace. All feelings seemed quiescent, calm or dead, as if the heartstrings rent could work no more, and joy and grief could never rise again. The heart beat on with an unconscious rhythm, but no response came from it, and no cry. Wayne was a provocation of events. Nothing is in answer, an outside touch. No nerve was stirred, and no reaction rose. Yet still, her body saw and spoke. It understood without the aid of thought. It said whatever needed to be said. It did whatever needed to be done. There was no person there behind the act, no mind that chose or passed the fitting word. All rose like an unerring machine, as if continuing old habitual turns and pushed by an old unexhausted force, the engine did the work for which it was made. Her consciousness looked on and took no part. All it upheld in nothing had a shape. There was no strong initiator, an incoherence crossing the firm wall, slipped into an order of related chants.
Thanks. A pure perception was the only power that stood behind her action and her sight. If that retired, all objects would be extinct. Her private universe would cease to be. The house she had built with bricks of thought and sense in the beginning after the birth of space. This seeing was identical with the seen. It knew without knowledge all that could be known. It saw impartially the world go by, but in the same supine, unmoving glance, saw too its abysmal unreality. It watched the figure of the cosmic game. But the thought and inner life in forms seemed dead, abolished by her own collapse of thought. A hollow physical shell persisted still. Patty?
All seemed a brilliant shadow of itself. A cosmic film of scenes and images. The enduring mass and outline of the hills was a design sketched on a silent mind and held to a tremulous false solidity by constant beats of visionary sight. The forest with its emerald multitudes, clothed with its show of hues, vague empty space. A painting's colors hiding a surface void that flickered upon dissolution's edge. The blue heavens, an illusion of the eyes, roofed in the mind's illusion of a world. The men who walked beneath an unreal sky seemed mobile puppets out of cardboard cut and pushed by unseen hands across the soil or moving pictures upon fancy's film. There was no soul within, no power of life. The brain's vibrations that appear like thought, the nerve's brief answer to each context knock, the heart's quiverings felt as joy and grief and love, were twitchings of the body, their seeming self. That body forged from atoms and from gas, a manufactured lie of Maya's make, its life a dream seen by the sleeping boy. The animals alone or trooping through the glades fled like a passing vision of beauty and grace imagined by some all-creating eye.
Thank you. Lupa.
Yet something was there behind the fleeting scenes. Wherever she turned, at whatsoever she looked, it was perceived, yet deep her mind inside. The one holy year shut itself from space and stood aloof from the idea of time. Its truth escaped from shape and line and hue. All else grew unsubstantial, self-annulled. This only everlasting seemed and true. Yet nowhere dwelled, it was outside the hours. This only could justify the labor of sight, but sight could not define for it a form. This only could appease the unsatisfied ear, but hearing listened in vain for a missing sound. This answer not the sense, called not to mind. It met her as an uncalled, unaudible voice that speaks forever from the unknowable. It met her like an omnipresent point, pure of
dimensions,
unfixed, invisible, the single oneness of its multiple beat, accentuating its soul eternity.
Thank you, Amitraj.
It faced her as some vast knot's immensity, an endless no to all that seems to be, an endless yes to things ever unconceived, and all that is unimagined and unthought, an eternal zero or untotaled ought. A spaceless and a placeless infinite, yet eternity and infinity seem but words, vainly affixed by mind's incompetence to its stupendous known reality. The world is but a spark burst from its light, all moments flashes from its timelessness, all objects glimmering from the bodiless that disappear from mind when that is seen. It held as if a shield before its face, a consciousness that saw without a seer, the truth where knowledge is not nor knower nor known, the love enamored of its own delight, in which the lover is not nor the beloved, bringing their personal passion into the vast, the force omnipotent in quietude, the bliss that none can ever hope to taste. It cancelled the convincing cheat of self. A truth in nothingness was its mighty clue. If all existence could renounce to be, and being take refuge in non-being's arms, and non-being could strike out its ciphered crown, some lustre of that reality might appear.
Thank you. Lorraine.
A formless liberation came on her.
once
sepulchred.
Sepulchred, alive in brain and flesh. She had risen up from body, mind, and life. She was no more a person in a world. She had escaped into infinity. What once had been herself had disappeared. There was no frame of things, no figure of soul. A refugee from the domain of sense, evading the necessity of thought. Delivered from knowledge and from ignorance, and rescued from the true and the untrue, she shared the superconscious high retreat beyond the self-born word, the nude idea. The first bare solid ground of consciousness, beings were not there. Existence had no place. There was no temptation of the joy to be, unutterably effaced, no one and null. A vanishing vestige like a violet trace, a faint record, merely of a self now past. She was a point in the unknowable. Only some last annulment now remained. Annihilation's vague, indefinable step. A memory of being still was there and kept her separate from nothingness. This was in that.
She was in that.
Oh, she. She was in that, but still became not that.
Thank you. Leila.
This shadow of herself so close to now could be again self's point that we need to live, return out of the inconceivable, and be what some mysterious vast might choose. Even as the unknowable decreed, she might be not, or new become the old. Or, if the omnipotent nihil took a shape, emerge as someone and redeem the world. Even she might learn what the mystic cipher held. This seeming exit of glows and alone could be a blind, tenebrous passage screened from sight. A state, the eclipsing shell of a darkened sun on its secret way to the ineffable. Even now, a splendid beam might flame back out of the silence and the melody. A gleaming portion of the all-wonderful, a power of some all-affirming absolute, a shining mirror of the eternal truth, to show to the one and all its manifest face, to the soul of man their deep identity. Or she might wake into God's quietude beyond the cosmic day and cosmic night, and rest at ease in his white eternity. But this was now unreal or remote, uncovered in the mystic fathomless light. In infinite nothingness was the ultimate sign, or else the real was the unknowable. The lonely absolute negated all. It effaced the ignorant world from its solitude and drowned the soul in its everlasting peace.
You can play the last.
only sometimes small thoughts arose and fell, like quiet waves upon a silent sea, or ripples passing over a lonely pool, when a starry stone disturbs its dreaming rest. Then all grew still, nothing moved anymore, immobile, self-wrapped, timeless, solitary, a silent spirit pervaded silent space. Unutterably effaced, no one annulled, a vanished vestige, like a violet trace, a faint record, merely of a self now past. She was a point in the unknowable.
Thanks to Schaubendorf.